with exactly this laser focus. And this movement has a flip side too, which is all about simultaneously driving new rights into law that enshrine we the people's inherent right to govern ourselves. We call it rights-based organizing and lawmaking. I've been an educator and community organizer in this work now for 21 years. What do you think? Can you see the usefulness of this strategy as you strive to come up with more effective ways to protect your small farmers and to guarantee safe and healthy food for all who live here? And if your communities move forward in setting up a community rights ordinance campaign, the question I encourage all of you to be asking is this one. What do you want to achieve? Not what do you think you can get? Not what are you allowed to do? Because you see, our branches of government are all legally required to serve us, to be accountable to us. They're all subordinate to us. They have duties and responsibilities to us. Again, here's the first paragraph of your South Carolina state constitution. Quote, all political power is vested in and derived from the people only. Therefore, they have the right at all times to modify their form of government. Unquote. What I have just been reading to you is a very brief excerpt from my keynote speech last Friday at the University of South Carolina, titled, Why Do Large Corporations Get to Decide What We the People Eat? The entire speech can be found on my website at paulcienfuegos.com. You've been listening to the weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. You can hear future commentaries every Tuesday on the KABU Evening News in Portland, Oregon, and on a growing number of other radio stations. I welcome your feedback. You can subscribe to my weekly podcast via iTunes or at communityrightspdx.org. You can sign up for my community rights updates at paulcienfuegos.com. You can follow me on Twitter at cienfuegospaul. Thanks for listening, and remember, we are the people we've been waiting for.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dominic Anaya, Ken Gonzalez, Tony Letigre, Robin Ryan, and Natasha Delapine. Special thanks to Monica Beamer. The producer is Kanan Schlesinger. Our engineer is Sequoia Wright. The KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website as kboo.fm/eveningnews. Or look for us on Twitter at KABU News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Jenny Okoyama.
And I'm Kanan Schlesinger. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday, Talk Radio Paul Rowland speaks with Karen Coulter of the Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project about activism, animism, and a benefit this Friday at Velocult. At 9 on Political Perspectives, Kristen Yunt hosts another in a series of programs about the Willamette Harbor Superfund site. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on The Recovery Zone, Stephanie Potter interviews Jordan Fink, founder of World Tree, about working with nature to remove CO2 from atmosphere and into soil. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. That's it for tonight's newscast. Good night, Jenna.
Have a good night, Kanan.
KABU News In Depth. where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Liquefied natural gas threatens the Columbia River into the industry of international fossil fuel shipments and destabilize local ecosystems. KBOO reporter Kanan Schlesinger spoke with Dan Saritz from Columbia Riverkeeper to get further insight.
I'm speaking with Dan Saritz with Columbia Riverkeeper. Dan is the conservation director. Dan, thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be on.
So first, for our listeners, what's Columbia Riverkeeper's role in protecting the Columbia River, and what would you describe as the greatest threats to the health of the river at large?
So our role has been to work with communities of people along the river who are trying to protect and restore the Columbia River, and that involves protecting salmon habitat, oftentimes from very large fossil fuel export proposals. And that has emerged as really the central threat to the Columbia River, maybe competing only with toxic pollution entering the river and the Hanford nuclear site. But certainly fossil fuel exports in the Columbia River pose an enormous threat to the lower Columbia River, which is really considered to be the linchpin of salmon recovery in the entire river system.
I really want to get into liquefied natural gas as one of the biggest threats. I think that's pretty undercovered in the media that we have access to. But I first want to ask you about Hanford. It's probably the most contaminated nuclear facility in North America. Can you describe how that's contaminating the Columbia River and I guess what your perception of how well understood it is by the public and how we're reacting to it?
You know, I think Hanford was a place that was perhaps better understood by the generation that's older than I am. And one of the big challenges we faced at Hanford is it was the place that was used to produce a vast amount of plutonium. And the plutonium was used for nuclear weapons. And in the decades that production was going on, enormous volumes of highly toxic and highly radioactive material was discharged into the environment very close to the Columbia River. And so now, 20 or 30 years after that production stopped, we're dealing with the toxic and radioactive legacy of producing nuclear weapons. And so the challenge for us is to not only remain committed to dealing with that legacy, that pollution, but also to ensure that future mistakes aren't made along the Columbia River, that we're not adding to more nuclear pollution by continuing to use nuclear energy or to produce nuclear weapons or to dump more nuclear waste at Hanford. So those are really the hallmarks of how the Northwest has engaged with Hanford in recent years. It's been to push for stronger and more thorough cleanup of that nuclear waste legacy.
And how well do you feel that the progress to that end has moved along?
You know, it's been an incredibly challenging time because the Department of Energy hasn't requested or received enough funding to adequately attack the problems at Hanford. And what we get out of Department of Energy is consistently proposals for long delays in cleaning up nuclear waste. And those delays result in radioactive pollution migrating further through the groundwater and reaching the Columbia River. And that's very frustrating to watch. And I encourage people who want to become more engaged in Hanford cleanup to reach out and get connected with us. This is a process that's going to be going on for decades more. And it's both daunting and incredibly important because the Hanford new site is home to the Hanford Reach, which is a part of the Columbia River that's the best main stem spawning habitat for Chinook salmon anywhere in the Columbia River system. And so it's, and to put it bluntly, it's too big to fail.
And this apparently is not a huge priority to the federal government because it was recently released that the Obama administration cut a lot of Hanford's budget for cleanup. Isn't that correct?
That's right. And it's sort of the hallmark of mismanagement that we see a lot of the funding that could be very effectively used for cleanup, things like digging up contaminated soil and moving it away from the river or treating that soil to make sure that both toxic and radioactive pollution doesn't migrate towards the river. We see them cutting those places. and cutting those activities that could be very effective in protecting the Columbia River. And it's a big frustration expressed not only by us, but also by Senator Murray from the state of Washington, who's been very critical of the proposed actions by the Department of Energy.
So I want to shift gears and focus in on liquefied natural gas, or LNG. Riverkeeper, the organization you work with, identified LNG as one of the greatest threats to the Columbia River. Why is the mouth of the Columbia River so important for LNG corporate interests?
Yeah, it has been a 10-year battle to wrest the Columbia River estuary's future away from the LNG industry. So for over 10 years, the LNG industry has pushed what started out as four separate proposals to first import and now export liquefied natural gas. And essentially, the reason why the Columbia River is in the crosshairs is that it's a very attractive short path for shipping fracked gas from the middle of North America to higher-priced overseas markets. We are standing in solidarity with our friends and allies in Southern Oregon who are fighting the LNG proposal there in Coos Bay, which has received a lot of attention in the last couple weeks because the federal government actually turned down the pipeline for the Jordan Cove project for the first time in sort of a precedent-setting decision. We are really relying on the long-term commitment of people in the Columbia River estuary to find a better future and to keep working towards that better future and to make sure that the Columbia River estuary ultimately follows that path and achieves a denial of these projects altogether. But we're not going to hang our hats on FERC and resting now that FERC has made this decision. We really need the state of Oregon and all Oregonians to firmly commit that we will not become a pathway for fracked natural gas produced with hydraulic fracturing anywhere in North America and shipped out to overseas countries.
That seems like a huge victory. What do you think comes next in the fight against LNG and essentially our backyard?
What comes next is, you know, we're going to be dealing with the Oregon LNG project on the Columbia River, and they don't have a decision from FERC yet, and they're aggressively pushing to try to get approvals that they need to build this project. And so really the heroes have been these amazing people along the pipeline routes and in the Columbia River estuary in Astoria and Warrenton, who for 10 years have stood their ground and simply refused to allow Oregon LNG to make any progress. What we're looking for now is decisions that will force the investors to pull out of what is already clearly a dead-end project in the Columbia River. It's a big challenge, but it's one we really hope to achieve in 2016.
And for our listeners, can you describe what FERC is and maybe like how much Columbia River Keeper is beholden to how they operate?
Yeah, so FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and they are the ones sort of in charge of deciding where these terminals go and where the pipeline routes would go. They are widely regarded as a rubber stamp agency, and so it was a huge surprise that they actually turned down the pipeline in Southern Oregon. And I think it's a real credit to the people who, in good faith, participated in the process for over 10 years, and the 90% of the landowners along the pipeline route who simply refused to work with the company. And it shows that whatever FERC decides, the people in Oregon who live in these places and care about them are not going to let these projects happen. It's certainly welcome that FERC turned the project down, but we will not rest until Jordan Cove and Oregon LNG don't exist as proposals in Oregon.
And sort of as a nightmare scenario where a project like this goes through or multiple do, what do you think that would do to the ecosystems at the mouth of the Columbia and in the whole of the Columbia? And can like that many more tankers be sustainably passed through the river?
Yeah, it's a crisis for the lower Columbia River to imagine Oregon LNG building and operating the terminal as it's proposed. So the area they want to construct the berth for these huge LNG tankers is critical salmon habitat and good fish habitat. It's important not just to restoring and maintaining healthy fish runs. It's also very important to both the sports fishing and commercial gill net industry in the lower Columbia River. So no matter which way you're looking at it, what Oregon LNG plans to do by dredging over 1.2 million cubic yards out of critical salmon habitat, which is just a huge volume of material in a very sensitive area, and building a massive 36-inch pipeline with 100-foot minimum right away over the most rugged areas of the Coast Range. All from all of these perspectives, Oregon LNG would have a terrible detrimental impact on salmon habitat, on public safety, and on the economic future of these regions, which rely on healthy salmon runs and beautiful landscapes, and the fact that people come to the lower Columbia River not to visit heavily industrialized place like the Houston Ship Channel, which is where you find LNG-type developments, but rather something that a place where salmon can still survive. And
this is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Problem with Privilege, a four-week class hosted by the Portland Underground Grad School starting April 4th at 6:30 p.m. This class is for those who want to name and correct liberal racism, who want to understand and interrupt isms, and who want to be a powerful ally and take on race issues and white fragility without co-opting the issues. Again, that's The Problem with Privilege, a four-week class hosted by the Portland Underground Grad School starting April 4th at 6:30 p.m. at Hatch, 2420 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Information on how to register for the class and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program